Case on our calendar for oral argument is In Re the Assignment for the Benefit of Creditors of William Szczepanski.
Szczepanski.
All right. I was close. Good morning, everyone. You're glad I had to ask them to call that case. Now I know why they call him Bill all the time. Counsel, while you are getting settled, I'll remind you that you each have 15 minutes for argument. Are counsel for respondents going to be splitting their argument time?
We're going to split our time, and I think we just informed the. I think it's 10 minutes and 5 minutes.
Okay, great. It's important that you each state your name, identify the party you represent when you begin. I don't know if I have anything else to say other than the podium can go up or down so that it is appropriate for you. Yeah, I'm sure you do. And the people that come after you for appreciate that as well. All right. When you are ready, Counselor for Appellant, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Counsel, I am Kristen Rowell with a law firm of Anthony Osland, and I represent Appellant GF Finance. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. I've been thinking a lot about how to present my argument today because there's a fair amount of information to sift through. And really what this case comes down to is that GF Finance is entitled to the unit retains that were owned by Bill Szczepanski because GF Finance is the only party that has a perfected security interest in those unit retains. Now, one of the things that the district court made in error was to essentially disregard Minnesota partnership law. There's very little analysis about Minnesota partnership law in either of the district court's orders, and so I do want to speak to that issue, but before that, let me tell you about the standard of review. The standard of review here is de novo. This court gets to look at partnership agreements under a de novo standard. It also looks at the articles and the bylaws of American Crystal under a de novo standard, and it also looks at whether something was actually perfected as a security interest under a de novo standard. So we ask that the court consider that standard as it reviews the evidence. Now, I think one thing that would be helpful is for me to talk about things in terms of a timeline, because as I was trying to get my head around really what went on here, a timeline was helpful. GF Finance's security interest was perfected in 2004. It was a long time ago. It was the earliest perfection of the security interest in unit retains owned by Bill Szczepanski.
And that's a subset of the unit retains ownership, right? I mean, isn't the one of the issues in dispute is whether, in fact, your client owns the unit retains for all of the Sugar Beet Ventures, that partnerships that he was involved in?
Exactly, Your Honor.
But there is a universe of things that everyone agrees that they were his to own and that your client has the first security interest.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And that is the 35 shares of common stock that he had.
That's correct.
That Bill Szczepanski had.
The 35 shares, everyone agrees. Us, Choice Financial, the assignee, and the district court all agree.
Right, and the district court acknowledged that.
Yes.
That was actually the last one that it listed in terms of who owns what and in what order.
That's correct. We agree with that aspect of the district court's order.
And that was the 2004 security interest perfected in those interests.
Exactly. And what GF...
But the issue here really isn't those 35 shares. The issue is with respect to the 22 shares that were given to the Sugar Beet entities by Szczepanski, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. The issue in dispute is those shares with respect to those Sugar Beet entities, which are joint ventures, which are analogous to partnerships under Minnesota law, which
right.
is why I raised the issue of the partnership law.
Right. And so those joint ventures, Bill Szczepanski was provided them an interest in the common shares of American Crystal.
Correct.
Okay. And then they received from other parties the preferred shares in American Crystal, correct?
To create the joint venture. That's correct.
And that was when those joint ventures were formed.
Yes.
Those transfers took place.
Of the shares?
The shares.
That is what was contributed to create those entities, correct, Your Honor?
Right. So was the formation of the joint ventures, was that an asset or was that a stock or both?
Was the creation of the joint venture?
in the creation of the joint ventures, was it stock transfer, asset transfer, or both?
In the creation of the joint venture, it was a transfer of the share of stock okay. to the joint venture by Bill Szczepanski.
So it was a stock transfer?
Correct.
Okay. And so now those entities have both the common shares and the preferred shares of American Crystal.
The entities, the 22 sugar beet entities, yes.
Correct. So now under the American Crystal's bylaws, they now are considered the common shareholder of record in American Crystal.
The joint ventures?
Yes.
The joint ventures are considered a common shareholder of record. That's correct.
Okay. In those shares that Szczepanski transferred over to them, correct?
Yes, but this is where the partnership law issue comes into such importance, and the reason for that is that...
But why don't we look to the bylaws of American Crystal? Why isn't that controlling in terms of how American Crystal transfers any interest that it has in those... unit retains.
What I think I hear the court saying is that the bylaws of American Crystal would trump the language of the partnership agreements for each of the joint venture entities.
Right, and because even if you have a partnership agreement, whether it's a partnership agreement or joint venture agreement, whatever, and I agree with you, joint ventures are partnerships.
Sure.
It just happens to be among several entities. And oftentimes you have entities that will have a percentage of interest in that joint venture.
Yes.
But the joint venture can put together whatever agreements it wants, or parties can put together agreements. But if you have the entity of that owns the unit retains and it says, this is how we shall distribute these unit retains, why wouldn't that trump any subsequent agreement? Because I know part of your argument is the timeline in terms of who comes first.
Sure.
But why wouldn't the bylaws for American Crystal, those come in time first?
So let me follow that logic, Your Honor.
In other words, here's my question is,
sure.
How would a subsequent agreement trump the bylaws?
Let's assume for the moment that it doesn't. And let's disregard the partnership agreements for a moment and say that we are the unit retains have been transferred and they are part of the joint venture. Here's where I want to point the court to the evidence as to why I still think GF Finance is the owner of those unit retains, and that's because there was never a valid security interest, a valid security agreement, or security interest that was created by Choice Financial. And here's why that is. 2004, as I mentioned, was when GF Finance perfected its security interest. What happened next in time? Well, in January of 2017, Bill Szczepanski, after suffering from some financial trouble, transferred all of his assets into the assignment for benefit of creditors. And what I direct the court to review by way of evidence in that regard is the agreement that Mr. Szczepanski entered into with the assignee, which is at addendum pages 41, 42, 43, and 44. And it says in that assignment that Mr. Szczepanski is assigning to the assignee all of his assets, it has a lengthy paragraph, including what's attached on Schedule A. Schedule A is addendum page 44, and Schedule A identifies 1.2 million American Crystal unit retains. At the time of January of 2017, when all of these unit retains were transferred to the ABC, no one else had a security interest in those unit retains other than my client.
What about what happened in 2009?
So let's look at 2009. That's my next point. Okay. So look at addendum page 64. What happened in 2009 is that American Crystal signed off on notice of security interests, which were submitted by Choice Financial. And what you'll see on page 64 of the addendum is that it says this particular joint venture borrower identified by shareholder number 903389 has granted to Choice a security interest in, and it refers to the unit retains.
And that's the that's a joint venture that's actually making
it is. Right. And what this notice goes on to say, which is important for the court to see, is that it says, as documented by a security agreement dated 1-1509. Everyone in this case agrees that security agreement does not exist. It's never been produced. It's never been discovered. It's not a part of the court record. And so it's very clear.
Except by reference.
Except by reference. And so although I don't disagree that there is law to suggest that you don't actually have to have the security agreement, there can be other evidence, certainly the law is not, and I'm not aware of a single case where you have a separate instrument that purports to reference a security agreement that does not exist. So that's where I come back to this issue of Choice Financial does not have a valid or perfected security interest in those unit retains. What happened next?
Why don't they have a perfected interest? Didn't they register that? And they're the only party that did, from what I can see in the record, correct?
Well, so what happened next? In 2009, there was no financing statement that there was filed at that time. And then the next thing was, I suspect after this ABC happened, Choice Financial said, oh, shoot, we don't actually have a security interest. So then if you look at page addendum 56, this is a security agreement dated August 4th of 2017, 6 months after those unit retains were already transferred into the ABC. And what Choice Financial did at this point is it said, hey, Bill, why don't you sign this security agreement now on behalf of all these sugar beet entities because we really want to get these unit retains. My client didn't do this because my client thought it doesn't need to. We have the earliest in time perfected security interest in all of the unit retains owned by Bill, and as exhibited by the assignment to the benefit of creditors, all of those unit retains were transferred into the ABC.
So that's a good question. Why didn't your client perfect those and file those under the statute?
GF Finance didn't because it didn't believe it had to because it already had the first-in-time perfected security agreement. And I'm sorry, financing statement and security agreement dating back to 2004.
Why didn't they file? Why not perfect your interest?
At that time, the unit retains had already been transferred into the ABC, and this is consistent with our argument here. We don't believe that they could have. We don't believe it's effective because the unit retains had already been transferred to the ABC. Both the ABC and the district court noted that with respect to the security agreement that is at addendum page 56, dated August 4th of 2017, that it gives them heartburn that they would be relying on this in terms of how to decide this issue of the unit retains. Now, this is why I come back to the language of the partnership agreements, because ultimately, when it comes to partnership law, this court's job is to determine the intent of the parties. And in many of those partnership agreements, what it says is the unit retains remain Bill's sole property.
Under a number of them, not all of them.
Under a number of them.
Four or five of them?
What we did is we provided in the briefing, Your Honor, we provided examples. I believe in total it was 13 of the 22. I can double check that number.
It wasn't all of the 22.
It was not all of them.
I think this is an important point. All 22 of the partnership agreements were not identical.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Each tailored for the particular relationship that they had. And there are different parties involved, different negotiations, different terminology.
That's exactly correct, Your Honor.
So are you saying only a subset of those 22 are owned by your client? Or are you saying all of them, even if they don't have that language, because you're relying on that partnership language?
That's correct, Your Honor. So I think this is an important point, because I think this is one of the things that the district court needs to sort out. This was an error. One of the alternatives, of course, that this court has before it is to reverse and remand to the district court to sort out that exact issue. We want the court to now look at the language of all of these partnership agreements and figure out what was the intent here.
Well, do we even need to get there to the partnership agreements?
The court could determine that Bill Szapanski owned all of these unit retains, and therefore my client is entitled to the proceeds from the sale that happened this summer.
Even after transferring them to the joint ventures, the common shares, his interest in the common shares.
Yes, and I suppose, Your Honor, because I come back to what he retained as his rights, which comes back to the language of the partnership agreement.
How can he retain rights when he's transferred his interest in the common shares, though? That's what I'm struggling with. How can you retain an interest when you've transferred it away?
Right. So what I hear the court asking is what appears to be an inconsistency between the American Crystal bylaws and the partnership agreements.
Or at least some of the partnership agreements.
At least some of the partnership agreements.
I'm looking at one that makes it very clear that it's the joint venture that owns all the unit retains. So.
Certainly. And so let's talk about one where the joint venture would own all the unit retains. Then when the joint venture receives those unit retains, they are distributed to Bill Szapanski. And it would be a legal fiction to say that Choice Financial came in 2017 after all of the unit retains had been transferred to the ABC and now can sweep them out from GF Finance's hands.
Well, but I see that's where I'm struggling with, because once Bill transfers his interest in the common shares to the joint ventures, he's no longer a common shareholder in American Crystal, correct?
Well, he's still a common shareholder in American Crystal.
Well, his 22, but I'm talking about, or his 35, but I'm talking about the 22 that he transfers to the entities.
He has the ability to transfer shares and retain the right to the unit retains.
How can he do that, though, if he in order to be a common shareholder in those particular shares, he has to hold two things, the common shares and the preferred shares. I'm sorry, common stocks and preferred stocks. But if he gives away the common shares to another entity in those particular shares, he is no longer a common shareholder in ABC for those particular shares, correct?
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor, because in transferring those common shares, he can retain the right to receive the unit retains, which is exactly what he did.
And how does he retain his interest in the unit retains when he's no longer a common shareholder of American Crystal in those particular unit retains?
He does that through the partnership agreements, which we've submitted. So he retains his right to receive unit retains, which come into existence at a future date.
Those partnership agreements are between him and the joint venture. It's not between him and American Crystal. That's a separate agreement that he has there.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And American Crystal is the entity that enforces that agreement.
That's correct.
Okay.
I see that my time has
You will have 5 minutes out. For rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Counsel for respondent.
Your Honor, there are two.
You need to state your name and identify your party.
Oh, excuse me. Yes, I'm sorry. I'm much more used to bankruptcy court where they already know who I am. My name is Eric Aldgren. I'm the assignee in the assignment for the benefit of William Szapanski. Actually, it's a little helpful to give you some background. A big part of what my practice involves is as a bankruptcy trustee and an assignee for an assignment for the benefit of creditors is actually very similar to a bankruptcy. And my role is very similar to that of a bankruptcy trustee. My job is to collect the assets, liquidate them down to a pile of money, and then distribute that pile of money to the various creditors for the benefit of the creditors, both in terms of a bankruptcy and an assignment for the benefit of creditors. In my mind, I look at an assignment for the benefit of creditors as much like a state law bankruptcy. There are two issues here. Number one is, did the court properly authorize me to sell these shares, not to sell the shares, excuse me, sell the right to receive the unit retains? The second issue is, assuming I was properly authorized, how should that pile of money be distributed? With respect to that first issue, I think it's clear that the court did properly authorize me, that the court had authority to authorize me and I had authority to sell the right to receive the unit retains.
For who? Whose unit retains?
The unit retains, I believe, are clearly owned by the entity, and they are then allocated out from there to Bill Chapin.
But I meant, are these Bill's unit retains or the joint ventures?
You know what? Let me let me take a step back because this is actually important, and I was going to get to it more in terms of the second question, but there is some confusion, I think, even here among the court, as to how these partnerships are set up, and it's good to understand the background on it. American Crystal was started back in the 50s. It's a closed co-op, and that's an important concept. It's a closed co-op meaning that that only shareholders can sell to the co-op, and the co-op only pays its shareholders. It's a little bit of a quasi-monopoly. That's why these unit retains are so valuable, because everybody knows that American Crystal is going to pay. There's a lot of problems in the farm economy right now, but it's not with American Crystal. And anyone can grow sugar beets. You just can't sell sugar beets unless you're a shareholder. Now, back when these were first started, everyone who was a member of American Crystal was a producer. As they aged, as they got older, there became a problem. The members didn't want to sell their shares. They loved American Crystal. But they didn't want to keep farming. They wanted to go down to Arizona or Texas. And so American Crystal came up with a way that they could still maintain their tax status as a co-op and allow retired producers to have some of the benefit of being a member of or being a shareholder in American Crystal. And they did that by saying, you can set up these joint ventures, limited partnerships, limited liability companies, and you contribute your shares, and a producer, somebody else, puts in all the inputs, the labor, the land, and actually grows them. What's important to understand here, and where there was some error in understanding this, is those 35 shares. When Bill Schepansky was growing pursuant to those 35 shares, he wasn't doing it through a partnership. And that's specifically recognized by the court. GF Finance's addendum, page 4, the court specifically understands. And Judge Schieferdecker understands American Crystal. He's up in Marshall County. He deals with these on a regular basis in divorce and other situations. And he showed a lot of understanding of how this system works. But those 35 shares, when he was producing essentially those 35 acres, it's actually, they decide how many acres you can grow each year based on your number of shares. I think last year it was 0.8 acres. But I don't do well at math. That's why I'm an attorney. So I'm going to think about 35 acres, 35 shares. He had 35 shares. He could grow 35 acres. There's no question that GF Finance, because those beets were produced by him as an individual, not through a partnership. The unit retains were paid to him as an individual, not through a partnership.
So is that the $1.2 million he's claiming are the ones coming from those 35 shares?
No. That's just a portion of them. Those are, and those unit retains, we did sell. We sold those unit retains. GF Finance consented to that. They understood that it was being sold, and that's part of my addendum, the ancillary or supplemental record that I created.
And just to be clear, so the sales of those unit retains, GF Financial is first in priority for those?
Absolutely.
Okay, and so GF Finance received the proceeds from the sale of
yes.
that asset?
Yeah.
Okay.
And
that's not in dispute by any of the parties?
Correct? That's not in dispute okay. by any party. But those were, he was producing on his own shares for his own account. He was the shareholder. The unit retains are paid to him. The other All of the other partnerships, the other 22 partnerships, there was essentially a passive investor, a shareholder, who contributed that share to, or those shares, to the partnerships.
Which shares? You mean the common?
Their individual shares. Let's say,
you mean the common shares?
Let's take any one of the, there might be, and I can't remember any of the names. Let's say it was me. I could enter into a partnership with Bill Schepansky if I own shares. I can't own shares because I've never been a producer, and that's one of the requirements. But I contribute those shares to the partnership, and in return for that, I get those shares back. It's very clear in all of these agreements that I get those shares back because that's the gold right there.
Well, the joint venture gets them.
No, I contribute them to the joint venture,
right?
And I have the right to receive those shares back.
As a member of the joint
venture. As a member of the joint venture.
Correct.
And I also get a payment.
Up and then comes back down to you.
I also get a payment, for example, $300 per share. It's essentially my preferred return. They're essentially renting these shares. Now, by their tax status, they can't rent the shares. They have to contribute the shares to the entity. The entity has to be who's producing the sugar beets. Only that shareholder, the entity, can sell the sugar beets. Only that shareholder, the entity, can get paid for those sugar beets. I'm running down on my time, and this is really an important concept to understand, is that the unit retains are not something that's contributed. They don't exist until the beets are grown, and they're not even represented by the beets until they sell those beets. The unit retains don't exist. All it is deferred compensation.
They're like equities in another co-op in some ways.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the REA or whatever.
Exactly.
You pay your bill, then later on you get a check back for equities.
Yeah, and co-ops do it because that's how they get their working capital. They hold on to it for 7 years. That's how much working capital they need.
Because the members own it.
What's that?
Sure, because the members own it.
Yeah.
Right, that's their capital contribution.
Absolutely, and they get it back. It rotates through. But it's really important to understand that the entity is growing the sugar beets. The entity sells the sugar beets, and the entity receives the right to payment, including the unit retains. But those are nothing but deferred compensation. It's not something that existed prior. Just deferred compensation.
And maybe I'm the only one who doesn't understand this. So when you came in and filed the 577 matter with the court, and Schepansky purported to assign to you $1.2 million in American Crystal unit retains, to the extent some of those unit retains represent unit retains that are supposed to go to the joint ventures, how were they subject to assignment? I'm not sure.
Okay. You know what? I didn't draft that. I didn't draft the assignment. The assignment is being drafted by Bill Schepansky and his attorney, and he's just saying, I'm assigning you all of my non-exempt assets. And because he's an individual, it's important to understand that it's non-exempt
assets. So it's his interests in the joint ventures.
Yeah. He's assigning me his interest in the joint venture, and he's assigning me the right to receive these unit retains. The important part to understand is that I can sell the right to receive these future retains, but it's not that I can somehow strip them of the security interest that has already attached to them, that the entity gave. And only the entity, because the entity owns the unit retains the right to payment, only the entity can grant a security interest in it.
Okay. I see your time has expired.
My time has expired.
We'll have to let your co-counsel, co-respondent, have a few words.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Jeff Peterson, and I'm counsel for Choice Financial Bank and a respondent in this case. I want to make one point clear that maybe was lost earlier in this discussion. As determined by Mr. Algren as the assignee and as adopted by the court, the notice of security interests and the what we call the loan agreements, the loan and guarantee agreements, that's really an agreement between the parties, the partners. They both reflect a number of things. One is Exhibit B to, let me point to the court record, and it's in our brief, index number 175 and 176, and specifically Exhibit B of that affidavit. It's an affidavit filed by myself. Pages 43 to 238, which is almost 200 pages, of partner consents to the partnership granting a security interest. This happened well before the ABC had been filed. So the partner...
So can you back up there? What you said, what happened here?
So in the court record, docket index number 175 and 176,
right,
which is an affidavit, and the affidavit is fairly long, and that's why there's an Exhibit B, and there's a Part 1 and Exhibit... There's an Exhibit B, and there's a Part 1 and Part 2, because of the length of documents. It starts on page 43, which is Exhibit B. There's almost 200 pages of consents that were signed by both the passive investor and, as Mr. Algren joked, the individual in Arizona, and by Mr. Schepansky. And those documents, like I said, nearly 200 pages of documents, are signed by both partners, and that agreement says that the partnership may grant a security interest to Choice Bank. So I think that's critical, because there was some confusion in GF Finance's brief that said that the partners did not consent to this. The partners did consent to it by signing this what we've identified as Exhibit B and docket index number 175 and 176. So the passive investors were well aware that Choice Financial was going to finance this crop input, was going to finance the farming operation, and for doing that financing, Choice Financial was going to require a security interest. So in addition to that document, there was a notice of security interest, and that document is signed by Mr. Schepansky as the general partner. It has the granting language. It identifies Choice as a secure creditor. It requires jointly payable checks. And more importantly, American Crystal Sugar, in accordance with its bylaws, accepted that document and acknowledged it. And as we've argued in our brief, you don't need a formal security agreement to grant a security interest. You know, there's a little bit of form over substance there. I mean, the substance is, does the documents or the record show the intent of the parties to grant a security interest? And we agree that it's determined by Mr. Algren and as adopted by the district court that those documents read together grant Choice Bank a security interest. Now, again, there was a 2017 security agreement, and we acknowledge that was executed after the ABC had been commenced. But again, as argued in our brief, the ABC assigns the financial interest of the assignor, Mr. Schepansky. It doesn't assign his governance rights. And again, this document that was signed by Mr. Schepansky had been consented to by the partners well before the ABC had even been commenced. So he was just affecting what the partnerships had already agreed to, granting a security interest and signing a security agreement to Choice Bank.
What are we to make of that January 21st, 2009 document that says that there's a security agreement dated January 15, 2009 that apparently no one either can find or maybe it didn't exist?
Your Honor, we don't have a copy of that, so it either doesn't exist or we don't have a copy of it.
So what are we to make of that document that refers to the document that we either can't find or doesn't exist?
Well, I think it does show the party's intent to grant a security interest. And you don't, some cases cited by us in our briefs identify that, again, you don't need a formal security agreement. You just need the intent of the parties to recognize a security interest.
Right, but this document seems to evidence the intent to have entered into a security agreement, but there isn't one.
Yeah, we're not aware of the security agreement that's referenced in the document.
There's plenty of paper to go around.
Right, but I would still say that that document evidences the intent of the parties to enter into a security agreement. Your Honor, my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel for appellant, you have the last word.
Oh, my noise. Maybe I'll just do that. Can you hear me? Thank you, Your Honors. I want to address two issues. One is to just dovetail on what Mr. Peterson just said, which is this issue of the 2009 Notice of Security Interests. On page 22 of our brief, we cite this court's 2007 decision in Alley Inc. versus GEC, which stated that an instrument that provides notice of a security agreement is not itself a security agreement. Now, in that case, admittedly, the court held that it was a financing statement that wasn't a security agreement, but we did find another case that we thought would be instructive here from Ohio, where it said this is especially true, essentially where that notice references a security agreement that actually doesn't exist, whether there's a question about that other security agreement. So the 2009 notices do not create a security agreement under the law.
Create a security agreement, but it does seem to be evidence of some type of intent, whether it was perfected or not. And I'm using perfected, maybe might not be the best word given
sure.
the issues we have here. But it does seem to indicate that at least at a minimum the parties were talking about it. May have been drafts that never were finalized, signed, and executed. But
and we respectfully disagree because the entire premise of those notices refers to a security agreement that's never been discovered or produced here. So I would agree with the court if that security agreement truly existed, it doesn't. And that's what the distinction between the law that supports.
That it has not been produced.
Correct. There's no question about that.
Right. But the reference to a document like that seems to indicate that it was an issue that at a minimum the parties were discussing.
May have discussed at the time, but again, I don't think that's equivalent to creating an intent to create a security agreement, Your Honor. Let me address one other issue because the court asked some good questions earlier with respect to Szczepanski contributing these shares, and isn't that under the American Crystal bylaws by itself enough? So I do want to address that issue. And I know I come back to partnership law, but I think it's important to read partnership law and the American Crystal bylaws together. And again, this court has de novo review of these issues. So under Minnesota law, what partners can do is they can contribute some property rights to a partnership and retain others for themselves. They can contribute use of property to a partnership and retain full ownership of it. And that's really the distinction that GF Finance is making here. So what we're saying is, although it appears that these common shares were transferred into the joint venture, GF Finance's nuanced point is that those shares, the use of those shares, was contributed to the joint venture.
But doesn't American Crystal require that everyone, as Mr. Algren explained, doesn't the shareholder have to be the person who's making the sale to American Crystal?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, can you rephrase that question?
It's not just the use of it, it has to be the shareholder, doesn't it?
I don't know that that's true.
Do I find that out?
Yes, that would be in the American Crystal bylaws. So forgive me, I don't have those right in front of me right now. But that the use of the shares was contributed to the partnerships or to the joint ventures while the ownership was retained by Szczepanski. And that's evidenced by these partnership agreements in terms of that the parties explicitly agreed that the unit retains would be distributed to Szczepanski, that he retained those as his sole property.
Well, wasn't that true upon dissolution or termination?
Not in all cases, Your Honor. There were several of the joint venture agreements that say that the unit retained shall be the sole property of Bill.
Right, but most of that language was in the wind-up language. So in the event that parties end up in divorce, so oftentimes
yes.
they refer to it in joint ventures.
Yes.
This is how the assets are going to be divvied up.
And that's where we come back to the issue, Your Honor, of when that then occurs, when these unit retains are sold, then they transfer back to Bill, and it's GF Finance who has the first priority security interest that's perfected.
You have just a few seconds left. Can you address the notice of security interest documents that opposing counsel had talked about, the ones that had been signed prior to the ABC?
Yes, Your Honor. Unfortunately, I don't have those in front of me, and I was going to double-check those when I heard counsel's remarks. But to the extent that the partners of Szepanski actually did agree on those, then GF Finance would set aside its argument regarding that the partners had not agreed. That's not evidence I was aware of, and I just don't have it in front of me, so I apologize.
How would it be that they didn't agree, that the partners didn't agree to it?
Well, all I'm saying, Your Honor, is that GF Finance argued in its appeal that part of the reason these would be invalid is because the partners didn't agree. And what I heard Mr. Peterson arguing is that the evidence is to the contrary, and I just don't have that evidence in front of me, so I apologize. I'm just saying simply that it is possible that on that point, GF Finance could be incorrect factually.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. It's a very interesting case, and we've all learned a lot. As someone who grew up in the Red River Valley, it was particularly interesting to me to hear about American Crystal.
Thank you, Your Honors.
We will take the matter under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory 90-day period. That is the last matter on our calendar for oral argument, so we will recess to consider our non-oral calendar.